Welcome home, neighbors. This is Kathy from New York, owner at Animal Kingdom, and you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed. Your fast passes are booked. Pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome home, neighbors, to episode 38 of the My DVC Points podcast. Today, we are kicking off a three-part series on Disney's Polynesian Villas and Bungalows. In today's episode, we're doing a history of the Poly with Brian Reed from the Main Street Chronicles podcast. Main Street Chronicles podcast just kicked off this last summer, and Brian does a theatrical interpretation with actors on Disney lore. All the backstory. Season one is going to revolve around the Society of Explorers and Adventurers. When we originally recorded the show, he hadn't launched yet. Now it's out there. I can go ahead and tell you. I'll also tack on a brief sample of that podcast here because I'd like nothing more than you guys to go over and check out his show when we're done. At this point in the show, I normally do some type of an ad read. And you know what? I'm not really going to do that today, but I'm going to get the job done, I think, a little bit more effective and a little bit more interesting way. I like coming back in and passing on knowledge and wisdom to you guys that you can actually use and make sense out of things going on in the DVC world. Go back with me to episode 27, and Debbie confirmed that there is a natural life cycle of timeshare owners. In about 8 years, the average person wants out. Well, when I was recording the Bibbidi Bobbidi Bougie in the Bungalow show, Marissa from DVC Resale Market stepped up and helped me fill in a spot on that show, and I'm so thankful for it. But in the post-show comments, we were talking about this upcoming series, and she made this comment just off the side saying she was really glad to see this show come up because they have a lot of Poly listings. This is where I'm going rogue. I didn't even ask if I could mention this to you guys, but they have an abundance of Poly listings. And we asked why, and she goes, well, it's at that like 3-4 year mark where the owners are starting to like get their contracts paid down to the point where they can finally sell if they realize that DVC isn't for them or they made a bad decision. So now they can actually sell, pay off their loans and walk away from this. So sure enough, I'm on their website right now and I'm looking at contracts. There is a boatload of Polynesian contracts here. I'm seeing this thing listed as low as $127 a point for a contract that still has 45 years left on it and has average dues. But here's the killer part of this contract. If you go back to DVC Rental Store's email that comes out every day, two resorts top the list, Beach Club and Poly. They can't find enough members willing to rent Poly points to meet demand. It has been that way for the 3+ years that I've been on that list. Poly is an extremely attractive resort for the rental market. I'm doing the math on this right now, and this is a buyer's market out there. I saw some comments and posts this week of people saying, hey, I got offered $143 a point on my Poly contract. Should I take it? And I'm like, that's a pretty attractive price for a buyer. Maybe you could hold out to get more, but now that I'm looking at the website, I'm starting to see some listed in the 140s. Man, that guy needs to take that deal. But my point in this whole process, if you're interested in picking up a Poly contract, go check out DVC Resale Market. Right now is a really good time to be buying a contract and getting a steal on it as to what I see going on in the market. Now, I'm not a real estate agent. I'm just a guy with an MBA who studies this kind of stuff. So take that for what it's worth, but the real estate agents over there will be glad to help you. If you need financing, hit Debbie up at Vacation Club Loans. I know for a fact she'll be glad to help you. And that's a wrap on my attempt to come back in and share some good information and stitch it together to the point that I think it's a nugget of wisdom. if you really like this, drop me a note on it. If you really thought it was kind of lame, still let me know. MyDVCPoints@gmail.com. Or even better yet, if you've got a great testimonial for working with DVC Resale Market or Debbie at Vacation Club Loans, do a quick voice recording memo and just share that over to MyDVCPoints@gmail.com. I'd be glad to work in your thoughts into the show because we are a community-focused show. And I really, truly do want to know what you guys think, what your thoughts are, what your opinions are. And that's what makes this show so interesting. It's not just Chad's opinion. I try to keep my opinion out of the show. Every now and then, I got to go rogue and just go off on something. I can tell you right now, without a shadow of a doubt, it is a buyer's market for Polynesian contracts. I hope you guys enjoy this series. Let's jump into today's show. I'd like to welcome to the show today my friend Brian from the Main Street Chronicles podcast. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm great, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Glad you could be here and help us out on this poly history show.
Absolutely. I'm real excited to dive into this, and I'm excited to share my passion about the poly with you and your listeners.
Poly was an opening day resort, right?
Absolutely. It actually opened a day before the Contemporary.
Okay, so it really is the oldest resort there on property.
It is.
If I remember correctly, Walt had his hand in this property.
He absolutely did. And he actually helped decide where it was going to be placed. So the Contemporary, he wanted that placement because it would be the backdrop for Tomorrowland. And the Polynesian, he wanted it to be the backdrop for Adventureland.
What I've always heard is each of the Magic Kingdom resorts represents one of the lands there in Magic Kingdom. And so Poly was Adventureland and Contemporary was?
Contemporary was Tomorrowland.
Great. That would make sense. You could throw Wilderness Lodge over there at Frontierland.
Absolutely. But the other five potential opening day resorts didn't necessarily fit in with that. You had the Asian and the Persian. The Asian is actually where the Grand Floridian is. And the Persian is actually where Bay Lake Towers currently sits. And then there was the Venetian between the Contemporary and the TTC, which never existed as well. There's actually a little cutout into Seven Seas Lagoon, which you can look over on the right and you can kind of see where it was going to be. But with some land issues, they were never able to actually keep the footings in place. So that's why we were only left with the Contemporary and the Polynesian Village Resort.
That's what I'd heard, that the land just wasn't stable enough to hold and bear the weight of a resort.
That's correct. They've tested it numerous times over the years, and it's almost like quicksand on that little island, that every time they would pour a footing, it would sink right into the ground. So they realized that they just couldn't have a resort there, no matter how badly they wanted it to be.
Interesting. That's how we ended up with the Poly where it's at then. I guess the Poly's on pretty stable sand because it's not sunk yet.
Absolutely. And it's Walt wanted it to have a focal point, and he wanted to be able to see the castle from the beach, wanted to be able to see Adventureland, and just to have that overwhelming sense of being on a tropical island.
Well, that's what they've pretty well got there. Poly opened, you said, the day before the Contemporary?
Yes, sir. When they were opening, the paint was still drying because they went all the way up to the opening hour of trying to get things done. They were so far behind.
And was that the same day that Magic Kingdom opened? Or
it was October 1st, 1971. So yes, sir.
Wow. So that really is truly the only opening day resort.
Yes.
What can you tell me about prices at the Poly on opening day?
Well, it's hold on to your seats. The opening prices ranged from $29 to $44. I can't even imagine paying that today. What's the inflation on that, Chad?
Let me look it up real quick on an inflation calculator. So $29 in 1971 comes out to $182.02 in 2019.
Wow.
This is the price that all the DVC guides throw out there when they go, look at the price of the Poly and what it's done today. We all know Disney goes up faster than the rate of inflation.
Very true. So there were actually three price categories back in 1971. And the way they set reservations was really interesting. Let me tell you about it and let me see what you think about this reservation system. So in 1971, there were three categories of rooms, depending on the floor, view, and location, and they were the same for the Contemporary and the Polynesian. And you would actually make reservations by checking a box on a postcard. You would check your first choice and then your second choice, and you would select the category of room that you wanted. And the higher the price, the better the view. And they would, if they didn't have that availability, they would put you in the next best available room. So again, the prices were $29, $36, and $44. And if there were more than two people over the age of 17 in a room, they would charge you an extra $4 per person per night. And I can't even imagine how that would even work today, especially since we want to know availability right now.
Oh yeah, the internet age changed everything. I can remember when I was a kid though, which would have been in the early 70s, writing for information, various different resorts as I helped plan family vacations.
I wasn't even born yet, and I can't even imagine doing that.
Yeah, I remember getting back a brochure from Myrtle Beach that had a kitchenette in the room, and I had to ask, you know, what's a kitchenette?
What is a kitchenette, Chad?
It's pretty similar to a DVC studio today, like a deluxe studio. No microwave, obviously, back in the early 70s. But you had a little tiny mini fridge and a sink, like one or two burners for a stove.
Now, I know we'll get into the DVC at the Polynesian later on, but are there any studios with kitchenettes or kitchens at the Polynesian?
The DVC rooms at the Poly today are deluxe studios that have a little tiny bar fridge, a little tiny bar sink, a microwave, some cabinets, and some paper and plastic dishware and utensils these days. They've taken out the real utensils in the resort, which is kind of a bummer, but I get why they've done it.
So it's like your typical hotel little cooking area.
Yeah, except, I don't know, a lot of hotels don't have a microwave in them.
That's true. They are taking most of them out, which is quite a bummer.
Yeah, and so you've also got like a coffee pot in there, a couple of other, like a can opener, utensils, so that you can get by with. But that's just the DVC Deluxe Studios.
Okay.
So, Brian, what kind of like stats do you have on the Poly from opening day?
So, they're little-known facts here, and there were 1,500 rooms constructed 3 miles away from the site while the structural work was being done. U.S. Steel Corporation was building the Polynesian as well as the Contemporary Resort, and they were taking some unique approaches to the construction process. With the Contemporary, they built that large A-frame structure and they were sliding the rooms into place. Well, with the Polynesian, they did something a little different. They actually stacked the rooms on top of each other and built the frames, the hallways, and the staircases around the buildings. So each one of them actually weighed 6 tons and were 29 feet long by 14 and a half feet wide. There were 7 rooms completed each day. And, the longhouses that were built after opening day were actually built on site instead of using this modular process.
Do you happen to know which longhouses were built off-site and which ones were built on-site?
Yes, sir. There were 8 longhouses that were the original longhouses, and that was Bali High, Bora Bora, Fiji, Hawaii, Maui, Samoa, Tahiti, and Tonga. Now, those all have different names now, and as we get further on into the history, I'll tell you which one switched and why they switched.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that.
So, as we already said, opening day was October 1st, 1971, a day before the Contemporary. There were a total of 484 guest rooms, with 6 being suites. The total space that the Polynesian sits on is 39 acres. The grand opening, however, wasn't until October 24th, 1971. In 1972, Luau Cove opened, and it originally seated 550 people. And Chad, if you haven't checked out the Aloha Dinner Show, I would highly recommend it. I think it is a fantastic use of dining credits. It is a 2 dining credit meal. I would use the dining credits. I wouldn't pay for it because it is very, very expensive. So if you've got the dining plan, I would highly recommend using 2 dining credits on that experience because it's really cool.
Yeah, if it's anything like Hoop, it's better to use Tables in Wonderland on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because there is no external gratuity. It's all built into the price.
Right.
And so when you use Tables on it, it's just a flat 20% off with no forced gratuity.
That's cool.
So actually, here's what I would end up doing, Brian. I would end up using my Tables in Wonderland card and getting a straight 20% off. And then they don't add the 18% gratuity there because it's included in the cost of the show.
That's a great tip.
Yeah. So that's how I would come back in and do Spirit of Aloha.
Now, another tip If you have somebody in your party that you really want to embarrass, sit up front, because they will bring people on stage, especially the masculine men. They'll bring them on stage and make them do this really crazy hula, and it's really, really funny. I, however, sit in the back.
I was about ready to say, this sounds like the voice of experience there, Brian.
No, I was in the back. I did not volunteer, and thankfully the group I was with did not try to volunteer me. It was a lot of fun. It was absolutely a lot of fun, and it takes, I think it's a 2-hour dinner and show, so it's well worth the time.
Okay. I it's probably been a decade or so since I've done that, so maybe I'll have to come back in and revisit that one of these trips.
Well, when you go, I'll go.
Okay, deal. We'll do it on one of our trips, so.
Perfect. Now, the Polynesian has changed a lot over the course of history. When it first opened, it was actually a very adult-themed hotel, because it was seen as a place for adults to relax after letting the kids play all day at Magic Kingdom. And that has really shifted. It's now a more family-friendly resort. I think it's a great place to take your family, because it gives you a place where you can relax and get away from the hustle and bustle of all of the parks, and it'll allow you to help recharge your batteries and get closer to your family as well.
Now, that's interesting, because I kind of see it back in its old method now, because for DVC, you've got the bungalows or you've got the studios. And as a matter of fact, when we bought our Poly Points, it was just for weekends away without the kids, because we normally get a 1-bedroom or a 2-bedroom, but we knew if we don't have the kids, we can get by in a studio. So in my mind, it's kind of an adult resort. And then you got Trader Sam's there, and that just screams adult only resort. So I still see it as that.
And Trader Sam's is absolutely amazing. And one thing that I actually learned the last time I was there is that kids are actually allowed in Trader Sam's.
Really?
They're allowed in from 4 until I believe it's 10 o'clock. And they have virgin drinks that they serve the kids. And the kitchen's open, so you can have dinner in there. But Trader Sam's is one of my go-to places every time I go to Walt Disney World.
Yeah, it's high on my list as well. I won't say it's every time, but now that I know kids are welcome, man, I'm going to be bringing mine in. Now, do they have like the special drinks in the shows for the kids too?
Yes, they do. I think they tweak them a little bit for the kids, but they still do something special for the kids.
Oh, I'm not going to tell them about that. Okay. That's going to be fun. Okay. I know. Bad dad.
Well, I know a couple of the bartenders there, and they always make sure they pick on me because I only drink Bud Light there. And they always make a big spectacle, and it's a great time. But I always make sure that if it's somebody new that I'm going with, I always take them to Trader Sam's. So that way they can at least experience it once. And I know I have hooked quite a few of my friends that go every time they go now.
Oh, yeah. So note to self, our October trip, Brian, we're hitting Trader Sam's. So.
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay.
But one of the coolest things, and I know this is something that you wanted me to look into, on December 29th, 1974, this is probably one of the most important days in pop culture history. Do you know what it is?
Oh, I think I do. I think this is the legendary breakup of the Beatles day?
It is.
Okay.
John Lennon actually received the paperwork in his room to sign signaling the end of the Beatles. And he was staying in what is now the Hawaii Longhouse. He actually had a corner room on the bottom floor, and I don't know what room it is. I saw a couple rumors of what it was. Every rumor was a different room, but he stayed in the Hawaii Longhouse, and he got the paperwork and unfortunately signaled the end of the Beatles there.
You know, it seems like some of the cast members were talking about it and that they could, you know, one of them said, well, I can kind of take you there, but we really don't do that. And I just said, if it's something that Disney isn't encouraging, then I'm not going to play with it.
Yeah, they definitely don't have a plaque outside and say this is where this is where John Lennon signed the paper. The Polynesian has something interesting in its history, and the Contemporary has something interesting in its history. Do you by chance know what that was?
Oh, absolutely. That's where Nixon did his I'm not a crook speech.
That is correct. From the ballroom, I believe.
And that's where a lot of DVC member parties are still held today. I'm going to look for the plaque in there. Next time.
You probably won't find a plaque there either. Not a very proud moment in our nation's history.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know.
But it's still history.
Don't forget, man, I'm the guy who thinks Partner Statue should be a national monument. Just saying.
I am right there with you, brother.
Okay, so now, you said you have information on the transition there, because I'm wondering, well, the three ones today over there are Tokelau, Pago Pago, and Bora Bora. So let's go through some history here, because it sounds like they played a little bit of musical names on these buildings.
They really did. On October 28, 1999, what some would say the most drastic change, almost all of the longhouses were renamed. Tahiti became Aotearoa. Fiji was the only one to stay the same. Samoa became Tuvalu. Ballyhai became Tonga. Maui, which had already been changed recently to Maori, became Rarotonga. Bora Bora became Niue. Hawaii became Samoa. Tonga became Hawaii. Oahu became Tokelau. Pago Pago became Rapa Nui, which then got turned back to Pago Pago. And Moorea became Tahiti, which again went back to Moorea. Now, those last two were changed when DVC came back or came into the fold. So you're probably asking yourself, why did they change the names? Well, the original names of the longhouses included some words that were a little imaginary and words that didn't actually represent the locations that they were trying to represent. The new names all represent real Polynesian islands. The names were all rearranged so that if you took a map of Polynesia and a map of the Polynesian resort, all of the islands were roughly in their correct geographical locations.
Oh, so the proximity is somewhat geographically valid.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's kind of a neat little trivial fact. So now, the three buildings that are DVC, the Moorea building, the Pago Pago building, and Tokelau, were they original buildings or were they add-ons?
They were add-ons. So they were added on, let me see in all my notes, because they were added at different times. So we've got...
Well, it really makes sense that they aren't the original ones, because you said the original ones got built off-site and shipped in.
Correct.
And so when they get ready to gut these things and convert them into DVC rooms, it would probably be a whole lot easier for them to gut some that were built on-site than to have to deal with all the construction issues of 1971 built off-site and hauled into place.
Right. I mean, we saw how long it took for them to redo the contemporary rooms. Took forever. So Tokelau was actually the first expansion of the Polynesian resort, and that was back in 1978. And Tokelau added 144 rooms. And when they added that, they also added the East Pool, which was right beside the longhouse. They also added Tangaroa Terrace and the Snack Isle and Moana Mickey's. Now, the East Pool is what we now know as the Quiet Pool. And in 1985, Pago Pago and Moorea were built, and this added an extra 219 rooms, and these rooms were slightly larger than the originals.
Interesting. So I wonder if the DVC rooms are the same size today.
I don't know.
I mean, I've stayed there a couple times, and it doesn't matter what I put in for my room request, I end up with Pago Pago parking lot view every single time. Crazy. Crazy.
That is crazy. What other views do you have there? Is it the Quiet Pool and then the TTC?
Well, from a booking category, we have two categories there. We have a lake view, which is the Moorea building, the three floors that all supposedly overlook the lake, although you don't see much lake from the first ground floor. And then everything else is the same booking category for the non-lake side of Moorea, Pago Pago, and Tokelau. It's all just standard view rooms.
Interesting.
So when you book a standard view room, you could be in any of the three buildings. And I don't know, this is just my history with it. I always request Tokelau building, and I don't care which side. I really don't. And one time I even put in there, I'll take anything but Pago Pago parking lot view. Just anything. I don't care. You want to guess what they gave me, Brian?
Parking lot view.
In Pago Pago.
One and only time I stayed, my buddy thankfully got us an upgrade. I don't know how he did it, but we were there for an entire week and we got Samoa ground floor pool view. And boy, was that amazing.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Because we could sit out on the back porch enjoy a beer and watch the sunset underneath the other longhouses. And it was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, there is something to be said for the Polynesian resort, the beauty. The pictures you see there, you see a lot of them taken from Grand Flow, mm-hmm. looking back across the, like a sunrise photo. And it's absolutely amazing.
It is. It really is. And it, even though it's Central Florida, every time I step on property, and I've only stayed there once, but I have just fallen in love with the Polynesian culture, and it transports me there every single time. Even if I'm not staying there, just going to have a drink or just going to watch the fireworks from the beach, it truly transports me to Polynesia.
Wow. Now, it seems like there were some other name changes that were going on there, right? So Village comes to mind somehow. Do you have any history on that?
Yeah. So in 1985, the word Village was completely removed from the resort, and it didn't return until 2015. So it was originally called the Polynesian Village Resort, or excuse me, Disney's Polynesian Village Resort. And in 1985, they completely eliminated it. So as a kid going to Walt Disney World, it was always the Polynesian Resort. And it wasn't until just a few years ago, a few short years ago, that they brought it back and brought back a lot of the history that came with that word.
Interesting. Because, well, right now, while DVC owners know it as PV, the abbreviation of PVB, Polynesian Villas and Bungalows. But it seems like the word village also comes back in and comes into mind.
Interesting, because if you don't, for myself, who doesn't have DVC, I know the bungalows are there, but I never even think to consider it PVB.
Yeah, that's what we, that's our little abbreviation for it. I think if you look in the point charts and you download them, it actually has the abbreviation PVB.
Interesting.
I think the V stands for villas and not village.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Well, everything else in, you know, we're deluxe villas every place else. So, and it used to be the villas at Wilderness Lodge, then they named it Boulder Ridge, Copper Creek Cabins and Villas. Villas is a DVC term.
So also in 1985, there was even more change. They were finally switching from the 1970s feel, which brought a new color pattern and brought in more traditional patterns into the displays. And they also were completely refurbing all of the rooms. Now, remember, back when they were originally building the rooms, they would build 7 a day. And now, to refurb a room, it took 6 days to refurb one. And they were doing 28 at a time. How much do you think it cost to refurb one of those rooms?
Untelling.
It actually was only $7,000. But go back to your inflation calculator. How much would $7,000 in 1985 be in 2019 dollars?
Let me pull that up. Today, that would be $16,537.
Still, that's not terrible.
Yeah, it doubled since 85, just over.
Not too bad at all. One of your favorite additions, we've already talked about it a little bit. Are you ready for it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In 1985, the parking lot for Pago Pago was created.
Oh my gosh. And here I was thinking like Trader Sam's or something, something that had some like juicy appeal to it.
Only to you, sir. Only to you.
Well, I will say this. When you're driving a car, that Pago Pago lot is incredibly helpful for DVC members. Because we have our own little somewhat private parking lot there. Because the rest of the guests are just not close. It's just, but for DVC, that's a great little parking lot. It's not far from any of the three buildings.
Yeah, I know the time that I went to Luau Cove, we were actually staying at Art of Animation, and I had to park over in the Pago Pago lot and then walk all the way over to Luau Cove. I'm not going to say I wasn't a fan of that parking lot.
That it is. The DVC buildings are a little bit of a hike from the rest of the resort.
But then also on that side of the resort, we finally got the connection to the TTC, which I use that every single time I'm there. Because I'm one of those that doesn't stay on property all the time. I know I'm guilty of being a bad Disney fan. So I park at the TTC and walk over to the Poly after, walk back from the Poly after my nightly visit to Trader Sam's. And it's a nice little walk. You don't have to wait for a bus. You don't have to wait for a tram. You can just walk over there. It's a quick half mile walk. It's a nice way to stretch your legs after sitting for a couple hours.
Yeah, that's not a bad walk. And especially from like the DVC buildings, as much as I complain about Pago Pago, it is a really great building to be in because you can get over to TTC in just a heartbeat. It is just a hop, skip, and a jump over there. And that puts you right on the monorail to Epcot. You can hop the monorail there, or you can walk to the main monorail entrance at the Poly. Your choice.
All are great conveniences for staying at a monorail resort.
Yeah, and well, they're all a great convenience for staying at Poly, because I don't think any place else you can really walk to TTC.
That's a great point. You can try. You'll probably get turned away, but you can always try.
Yeah, yeah, they don't have sidewalks there for a reason, so.
Exactly. But what you may not know is that back in the 70s, 80s, and even early 90s, the feeling of Polynesia really wasn't there. It was just a hotel that transported you to a quote-unquote tropical getaway. It wasn't until the late 1990s that the general manager, Clyde Min, brought in historians from Hawaii to make it feel more authentic. They created a style, a Disney management style, called Values the Magic of Polynesia, and this would change the behavior of all of those who worked at the Polynesian. And these changes to the resort and staff would bring what some would say is the final, or was the final, ingredient to the Polynesian that would make it the jewel of Walt Disney World and bring that aloha spirit to life that we know now.
Now, that's interesting, because I thought like Aunt Cowie was an opening day feel, and she was brought in from the Polynesian culture, I know, to train dancers at first, but now she's like a staple there in the lobby.
Absolutely. So she was there, but outside of her, that was about it. And Aloha's dinner show, Spirit of Aloha dinner show. So the Spirit of Aloha dancers and Aunt Cowie, they were there, but the regular cast members, they weren't saying every time they passed by you, Aloha. They weren't making you feel like you were in Hawaii or in Tahiti or in Bora Bora.
It's a little less Polynesian polish then.
Yes. So, and now you hear it all the time. And later on, I want to share some phrases that you'll hear around the Polynesian that you and your listeners can use while you're there too, to make you feel as you are more of the culture.
Well, it works. So you definitely feel that Polynesian culture there. I don't know. For me, I mean, I walk through the deal and I see these, you know, seems like 4-inch wide grass blades compared to what I have here in Michigan. And this just lush tropical grass and the palm trees everywhere. And the flowers and everything is meticulous. It feels like a Polynesian culture just from the horticulture.
I would agree with you. I would absolutely agree with you. And they have worked extremely hard at not just the Polynesian, but everywhere on Walt Disney property to truly immerse you in whatever atmosphere you're supposed to be in. The horticulture staff at Walt Disney World is top notch, and they bring in experts from all over the world to help transport you by way of the horticulture, just like the sound and the smell zoo as you're, say, walking down Main Street USA, where they're piping through the sweet smell of cookies or the wonderful smell of buttered popcorn. It's all to transport us away from the real world. And I think that's one of the reasons why we all love Walt Disney World so much.
Oh, absolutely. So now what else came in the 90s from, you know, you said 92, we brought in a management shift and more theming to the culture of it. What else came out in the 90s?
So in 1995, believe it or not, a fan favorite opened. Many would think that this was an opening day restaurant, but Ohana opened in April of 1995. And if you haven't been, I would highly recommend taking your kids, or even if you don't have kids, go and have a character breakfast with Mickey and the gang. And along with that, you get Lilo and Stitch. But I would highly recommend making your ADR 180 days out, because it fills up very, very quickly. And with a character meal, again, I would be using one of those dining credits, because those are expensive too.
Now, are you a breakfast Ohana guy, or are you a evening Ohana guy?
I've actually only been for breakfast.
Oh, Brian, we got to right that wrong, man.
Next time we're there.
Okay. I'm like looking for ADRs that night then. Okay. I know what I'm doing.
Perfect.
We're going to have to write that wrong. Because, see, my kids are Stitch fans, and they want to do Ohana for breakfast. And it's just breakfast. Yeah, Stitch is there. That's cool. But now we're talking like Ohana for dinner. That's like its own stratosphere of Disney awesomeness.
That's what I've heard. I've yet to experience it yet, but you can't experience everything in one trip. You got to have a reason to go back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll take care of that.
Awesome. Also, something else that was added in the late 90s was the Kukui tree. And there was a time capsule buried at the base of it. And I couldn't find any information what they buried in that time capsule. But a Kukui tree is the actual state tree of Hawaii. And it is, you can see it when you walk out of the Grand Ceremonial House. And the old Hawaiian belief was that a person should not plant a Kukui tree near his house, but it was all right for a stranger to plant it. The stranger could plant it at the back of the house, but not in the front of the house. So at the Polynesian, the Kukui tree is right behind the Great Ceremonial House, and in accordance with the legend, it was actually planted by a hotel guest. The leadership team wears currently leis of black Kukui nuts, symbolizing their privilege and responsibility of lighting the way for cast members and sharing the magic of Polynesia and the spirit of aloha with the guests and lifelong friends. Just another way to help re-engage the spirit of the Polynesia culture.
That's interesting. So what you're telling us is we all have to start looking for the leis that the cast members wear. And if they're the black nuts one, they're in leadership
management? Yes, correct.
Wow. Okay. Note to self. We'll have to check out that detail.
Now, something else happened in the late 90s. And it's something that, I'll throw a little tidbit out here to you. Kona Cafe opened in 1998. The restaurant has changed its name numerous times. But, Chad, do you know what has stayed the same since opening day? There's one thing about that restaurant that has stayed the same since opening day. Any idea what it is?
Well, just using process of elimination here, would it be Captain Cook's?
No, sir. It is actually something that you can eat. Does that help you any?
Dole Whip?
No. Tonga Toast.
Really?
Tonga Toast has been around since opening day, and it is the only thing that has changed since that restaurant has changed names. So Tonga Toast is the only thing that has stayed the same with all of the different restaurants that have been there.
When did Pineapple Lanai open? Do you have that?
So Chad, to answer your question, August 2014 was when the Pineapple Lanai opened.
And that's when God opened up the heavens and blessed the Polynesian resort. Yes. Spoken like a true Dole Whip addict.
Absolutely.
What are some of the other notable events from history here at the Poly?
So in 2007, quite a few things happened. In February of that year, the Polynesian joined the Yacht and Beach Club, as well as the Grand Floridian, as a four-diamond resort through AAA. Although later that year, the Beach Club would lose a diamond. Also, 2007 brought us the H2O bath products that we all love to take home after each trip.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's been 12 years now since we've been able to get the H2O bath products.
When we do the Beach Club show, we're going to have to figure out what happened with that diamond loss, because obviously I got to go smack somebody.
Now, I've never stayed there, but it's on my list. Also, on March 13th, 2007... Auntie Kaui turned 75 and got an award from the state of Hawaii for preserving and teaching people the history of the islands. And she's still there to this day. And what you may not know is she was actually hired by Walt himself. And you can see her to this day making handmade leis in the Grand Ceremonial House.
Yeah, Chris Malik also pointed out in his interview that there's opening day or really old black and white photos of her in the lobby as well.
That's cool. But the most important piece of history, at least for you and your listeners, is 2013, and this is when talks of DVC would begin. Now, let me share with you what DVC was supposed to look like at the Polynesian Village Resort. It was supposed to be built in two phases. The first phase, there would be a five-story building near Luau Cove, as well as the bungalows off of the Tahiti Beach. And the second phase would bring another five-story building and a new pool, along with a lazy river, and a conversion of Tahiti over to DVC. They decided to scale it back, however, and Rapa Nui and Tahiti were going to be converted and the bungalows would start building later that year.
Really? Because, I don't know, Polly is kind of like an epic fail in terms of DVC, in my opinion, just from the point charts of the bungalows and then the lack of 1 and 2 bedrooms. So it sounds like they started off with good intentions.
It really sounded like it. And I tried really hard to try to find some blueprints or some sketches. Couldn't find anything.
Interesting. So, that's really disappointing because a lazy river there would have been the bomb.
It really would have. Now, if you thought that was cool, the original Polynesian was supposed to look like, I think would have looked pretty cool as well. It was supposed to be a 12-story high-rise hotel in the center of a lagoon where guest rooms were clustered around small streams, a pool fed by waterfalls. It would have a health club, which is something the Polynesian doesn't have, a high-ceiling South Sea dining room located at the top, as well as a skiing and diving lagoon. Now, many of these ideas changed and others made it to opening day, but most were removed shortly after this announcement.
Man, that's two towers. Yeah, that would have like completely changed that resort, and it would have been like so ultimately awesome as DVC. Yeah, I'm like blown away with disappointment now.
Right. Now, that was the original back in 1971, and then for them to come back years later to bring in the tower idea, it's that same adage at Disney. No idea is ever a bad idea and never dies. So you never know. When they run out of resorts to do expansions for DVC, you may get that tower over at Lou Alcove. You just never know.
Yeah, that would be killer. I would be all over that one.
And something else, back in the day, the Polynesian was actually supposed to be managed by Western International Hotel Group, and the Contemporary was supposed to be managed by the Marriott Corporation.
Well, there you could have got your points, man.
I know. I wish. But at least Marriott now has the Swan and Dolphin.
Yeah, at least. So, right. I mean, man, with the prices over there. Whew.
I'll stick with
my DVC points.
I'll stick with my free nights from Marriott.
I'm telling you, your Marriott points are for the win.
Yes, they are. I get lucky. I'm going down in a couple days. I've got 5 days completely free. Just not at the Swan and Dolphin.
So, Brian, we've talked about like some enhancements that's happened over the years. What kind of things have they pulled out of the resort and are no longer there?
So, some things that were way before my time, and I think even before your time as being a diehard Disney fan, were you used to be able to paddle a 40-foot war canoe that you could go out to the islands in the lagoon. How cool would that be? I mean, aside from the alligator part, how cool would that be to be able to actually hang out on those islands?
That would be cool. It would be cool to take that boat out there and like do, you know, the little Hawaii 5-0 music playing while you're paddling.
Oh, right? Absolutely. And that right there is why I love the culture, because I watch that show religiously every week.
Interesting. What else has been taken away?
So this next item is the most expensive thing on property at the time. There was a thing called a circular bob-around boat that had surround sound in them. Pretty neat technology for the early 1970s, but it cost $8 an hour to take one of those bad boys out.
And it was a boat with surround sound?
It was a boat with surround sound, and it was circular. Not really sure how it worked, but all the pictures that I saw, I didn't see any propellers, I didn't see an engine. I guess it was literally a bob-around boat. Not sure how it got out in the lagoon. Probably why it's no longer there.
Yeah. I mean, circular boats just don't seem very efficient to me. They seems like they float, but okay.
But probably the coolest thing that I wish was still there was there used to be a 65-foot Chinese boat docked, and it was called the Eastern Winds, and it was actually a cocktail lounge, and it offered 3 nightly cruises, one to see a water ski show, another to see the electrical water pageant, finally the third to see the fireworks. I think that would be absolutely amazing now.
You know, it would, because, well, like Melissa was pointing out in Franken Resort 2.0, episode 20, there are some entertainment options that we could do more of on that lake. I know Pirates and Pals goes out there. There's some other fireworks dinner cruises, but I really feel like we could utilize that a little bit more.
Oh, I agree. There was actually another cruise that you could take on the Seven Seas Lagoon. It was called the World Cruise Tour, and you would board the Ports O' Call, which was an excursion steamer, and this would take you around the lagoon as well as Bay Lake, and it was $1 for an adult and 50 cents per kid. So very affordable, and it allowed you a totally different view and vantage point of not just the Magic Kingdom, but all of the resorts as well.
Sounds like a predecessor to the modern day bar crawl.
I think you're right. And something that you may not remember, because it didn't operate very long, it lasted a long time, but it didn't operate very long, there actually used to be a wave machine installed on Beachcomber Island.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Like a wave pool kind of a...
They wanted to. So the story is that Walt Disney World president Dick Nunes wanted to be able to surf because he was a big surfer. Other stories say they wanted to have waves crashing so that that way you could hear it in Luau Cove. But to everybody's dismay, it eroded the beaches.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd just be really energy inefficient to pull that off.
Yes. So they tore it, or they just turned it off. And it sat from the early 70s until 1985 when they started it back up again to give it one last shot. And it when it didn't work again, they finally removed it in 1985.
Okay.
But how cool would that have been to have been actually able to surf in Central Florida?
Sounds cool to me, but I mean, I guess I would look at it and go, that's something they could probably pull off today over at the wave pool over at the water park.
Oh, they do. You can actually take surfing lessons at Typhoon Lagoon.
Yeah, so to me, it's like, okay, you could still do it. And you know what? Given the fact that it's like chlorinated water that's alligator free, I think I'll choose that option.
I agree. Those pesky alligators always getting in the way.
Yeah. So now, speaking of the culture there, I know we have Trader Sam's, which is a tiki bar. But what else can you tell me about that?
So the entire resort was meant to pay homage to tiki culture. Now, tiki culture was an American interpretation of the Polynesian culture, primarily reflected in West Coast restaurants like Don the Beachcomber and Trader Vic's. And this started to appear on the West Coast right after World War II. And this was to help rekindle some fond memories of the military personnel who had just recently come home from serving in the South Pacific.
So what you're telling me is a tiki bar is kind of like the Taco Bell equivalent of Mexican culture?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I guess they don't have moving chairs and, you know, lighted tanks and all that other kind of fun stuff and normal bars over in the Pacific Rim.
Very true. We did our best to make it as fun and inviting as possible. But of course, Americans are always changing it up to make it more suitable for us.
Yeah, I wonder if they sell like the $40 souvenir mugs over at the original tiki bar. So
Probably not.
Man, that mouse will shake you down.
Yes, he will. And we'll always pay. Now, something else that you may not know is that that white sandy beach that you're walking on at the Polynesian and the Grand Floridian, it actually came from Central Florida.
Really?
It came from the bottom of Bay Lake, right behind the Contemporary.
Really? So that's like original native sand.
Original native sand.
Do you know if the same sand is over at the beach club as well? Because that's pretty whitish.
I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that. I would assume it would probably be from the bottom of the lagoon over there.
Interesting. You know, it's beautiful sand and they meticulously rake it every single day.
We've talked about Trader Sam's a little bit. As I mentioned, it's one of the most popular bars on Walt Disney World's property. And like I said, it opens at 4 p.m. And if you want to get a seat there, you need to be in line at least by 3 o'clock because the seats come quickly. And I believe it's only 40 people are allowed inside. And it's a former janitorial closet from what I've been told. It's very, very small, but it is a mashup of the Jungle Cruise and Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room.
Yeah, it's really cool in there. I will say that.
And there are actually artifacts from the Adventurers Club that used to be part of Pleasure Island, which is now Disney Springs.
Probably the Walt Disney version, ironically, is about half the size of Trader Sam's over at Disneyland.
Now, which one do you like better? Now, I've not been to the one at Disneyland. I've only been to the one at Walt Disney World.
It seems to me like because it's smaller, the Walt Disney World version is a little bit more intimate. The way it is if in Disney World, you kind of have a rectangle with the bar at one end. And in Disneyland, it's more square-ish, but the bar forms a horseshoe in the center.
That's cool.
But it seems like there's just more quaintness and more crowd interaction and everything going over at Disney World. So I'd pick World. That's one I'll give to World.
I like it. I like it. So I just briefly mentioned the Tiki Room. And your listeners may not have caught on, but I called it Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room. Do you know what the other attraction is that has Walt Disney's name in it?
Walt Disney World?
No, sir. Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress. Those are the only two attractions in either Disneyland or Walt Disney World, or matter of fact, any of the Walt Disney resort parks that have his name in it.
Okay. I'll take that. I knew the Tiki Room did. I didn't know Carousel of Progress.
Now, let me ask you this, Chad. We're getting towards the end, and I'm not sure about your listeners, but are you into Hidden Mickeys?
Absolutely.
Okay. I've got a couple for you. They are spread all over the resort. Not just the Polynesian Resort, but the entire Walt Disney World Resort. And I want to give you a few of them, see if you can find them next time. You let me know.
What ones are at Poly?
So, I have a few. I'm not going to give you all of them. But for starters, there's a hidden Mickey right in the stone floor in the Great Ceremonial House. There is, I'm not going to tell you exactly where it is. You got to find it for yourself. I'm not going to give you all the hints. But there's one that's actually in the stone floor. It's pretty recognizable. There's another hidden Mickey in the bamboo artwork as you're going up the stairs. And something about that artwork that a lot of people don't know is they're fiberglass. They originally were real bamboo shoots in that artwork, but people being people, they kind of destroyed it. So they had to go to a indestructible product. So fiberglass it was. So insert hidden Mickey. And there, I'll give you one more.
Okay.
There is, and you got to be on the lookout for this one.
I got my eyes out.
It's in the laundry waiting area, and it's outside of the arcade. I'll be honest, I don't even know where the arcade is. Look for the hidden Mickey on the... I do have one more. It was hidden in my notes. There is a hidden Mickey in the touchscreen ordering system at Captain Cook's.
Really? Okay, I'll have to check that one out. The DVC members, we have our own laundry room, and I didn't know that there was an arcade there either.
Well, you're going to have to come and mingle with the peons to find the regular one.
You know, yeah. No. Ours is free.
Well, lucky you guys. I'll just take it back to North Carolina with me.
Or, you know, crash into the DVC room. There you go.
So from the Polynesian, we get a glimpse of what Paradise was to Walt himself. I mean, he had a hand in designing this. He didn't have a hand in building it. Unfortunately, he had passed away by then. But he at least had a hand in designing it. And I hope you guys enjoyed learning about the Polynesian. I know I absolutely loved sharing my love of the Polynesian Resort with you. But before I leave, Chad, I'd like to share a few Polynesian phrases that you and your listeners can use around the resort to feel more at home.
Yeah. Lay it on us, man.
So one that you're going to hear all the time is aloha. Now that means hello and goodbye. And it also means love. Now, we all know this next word from a very popular movie, Lilo and Stitch. Ohana.
Means family.
There you go. We already know that one. Now, did you know that this next word actually had a different meaning?
Now, there's more to that. It means, Ohana means family and nobody gets left behind.
There you go.
Okay. See, I watch my movies
now. Now, this next one came from a blockbuster hit that came out a few years ago. I'm speaking of Moana. And that name itself means ocean.
Okay.
And if you're ever there at Christmas time, you may want to say this. Mele Kalikimaka. Now that means Merry Christmas. And the last one, whenever someone does something nice for you at the Polynesian Village Resort, just say
mahalo.
There you go. And mahalo means thank you. Now when you hear mahalo, you won't typically hear a response back because there is no word in Polynesian culture for you're welcome. In Hawaii, mahalo or thanks is given without expecting anything in return. How cool is that?
That is kind of cool. It's kind of like a thumbs up at the end of the Facebook saying, hey, I don't want to say anything else.
Absolutely.
Mahalo, bro.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate being on. I hope to be back many, many times.
Oh, you bet. So let's just, before we wrap this up, Brian, let's give me a little quick rundown of your podcast and where listeners can find you.
So I'm one of the hosts of the Main Street Chronicles. And what that is it's a Disney history show. And it'll be a monthly show. We are launching in July of 2019. And I'm not going to tell you what our first topic is because we are teasing our listeners for the next however many weeks. And we're having some fun with it. But I think diehard Disney fans are going to have a blast with it. We're going to be telling a story along with sharing the history of this topic. So sorry for being so vague, but we won't be releasing it or any topic for the next seasons until we launch the first show. So we're having some fun with everybody. We're taking a different approach. It's not going to be a complete retelling of the history of a certain topic. We want to engage you, the listener, and we want to have fun with it. So we've got some actors coming on to help us share the story, and I am ecstatic about this opportunity. And this first season will be 6 episodes. It will go all the way through December, and then season 2 will launch in January, and no idea what that topic will be yet, but we'll either have 6 episode seasons or we'll go 12 episodes, so it'll be 1 episode per month. But excited to share my passion and my buddy Stokes's passion for Disney history. And we hope you guys come along. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And it is the Main Street Chronicles podcast on Facebook. And you can find us there every day of the week. And we've got videos weekly teasing you guys as to what this possible topic will be. And we hope you guys join us and have fun along the way.
Well, thank you very much for joining the show, Brian.
Thanks, buddy.
And welcome to the MyDVC Points Ohana.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning in this week. And I'd also like to do a shout out to ASTAHL94 over at iTunes. That person writes, "I really enjoy this podcast. It's fun to listen to fellow DVC members' opinions and ideas and learn about the things that they do on their trips. Chad is great, and you can tell that he's meticulous and cares a great deal about the quality of the podcast and the information that is covered. Overall, great podcast. I look forward to listening. Keep up the great work, Chad." And thank you for writing that awesome 5-star review. If you like the little rant that I did at the beginning of the show, you might want to sign up for our Patreon group, patreon.com/mydvcpoints. I'm not far from starting a monthly show just for Patreons. It's a little bit more of a, no, tell me what you really think. And we'll do some more nerdy analysis in that show, start pointing out some opportunities and ways to do some advanced techniques of leveraging your membership. That's what I can offer the Patreons there, and it'll be about a monthly show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day, and I look forward to catching you at our live show on Sunday nights.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know I'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.
And just as I promised, here's about a minute out of Brian's show, The Main Street Chronicles. I hope you guys enjoy it, and I hope you guys subscribe to his podcast. He does a lot of work on this, and it is a A-plus quality production.
Chapter 1, SEA. Brian and Stokes meet on a beautiful summer day at Disney Springs at the Walt Disney World Resort. While walking towards Town Center, they decide to go into Jack Lindsay's hangar bar. As they walk in, they take a step back and realize this is not a regular bar, but something much more. As they sit down, the bartender approaches.
Welcome to Jock Lindsay's. I'm Jock.
Wait, this is your bar?
Yes, indeed. It took a lot of years and a lot of air tours, but I eventually made enough to expand my hangar and put in a bar. And here she is. This place is a gathering spot for friends and travelers to come and share their tales of adventures and explorations.
How'd you end up here?
Well, in 38, I was working with my buddy Indy, you know, as his pilot. And we ended up here while searching for the Fountain of Youth. Well, I fell in love with this little island. So once our expedition ended, Reggie and I packed up a home in Venezuela, and I bought some property here and made up my own base of operations for my very own aerial tour company.
Wait, what? You said Indy, like Indiana Jones?
Yeah, Indy and I go way back.
So what's the last adventure that you and Indy went on?
Oh, well, it's been a while.